my songs teach me. You know, I get to see myself through my own songs that come back to me. It's a way of getting outside of yourself. It's a way of, like, I think I might have said it at the show, but it's a way of telling myself something with, you know, if it's interesting enough or more beautiful enough that I may actually pay attention to it. Because, you know, we all have things we know we should do or advice that we have for ourselves. We all have our own wisdom, but how often do we listen to ourselves? But if you put it into something like a song or a painting or a poem or, hell, a good dinner, you know, you make something out of it, then you get to really appreciate it and see it, and then it changes you. Yeah. And hopefully maybe changes other people too.
Welcome to Curious Goldfish, a podcast community where music and curiosity come together through interesting conversations with the music makers of our world. I'm your host, Jason English. You can find Curious Goldfish in all the major podcast and social media platforms. And of course, we have all of our content on our website, curiousgoldfish.com. Through an incredible run now at more than 160 consecutive weeks singing on a Facebook live stream, Atlanta-based singer-songwriter Elliot Bronson unwittingly built a global community of active, loyal listeners who eagerly anticipated his weekly set list and to find a way to connect with the artist. In doing so, not only was a connection made with faceless listeners, sending emoji shoutouts and quick hellos in the comments section, but Elliot also became a master of cover songs. 1970s folk rock? Sure. John Prine's greatest hits? Easy. He even tackled an anthem from one of the all-time greats and has somehow made it his own.
Whatever your body covers me, can you, my darling, can you picture this dream, if you will, of a courtyard? Oceans of violence in blue, animals strike curious poses. They feel the heat between me and you. How can you just leave me standing alone in a world that's so cold? Maybe I'm just too demanding. Maybe I'm just like my father. I'm too bold. Maybe you're just like my mother. She's never satisfied. Why do we scream at each other? This is what it sounds like when doves cry.
Hearing Prince's When Doves Cry by a middle-aged man playing acoustic guitar in a listening room in Dahlonega, Georgia, on a cold Saturday night wasn't on my 2024 bucket list, but I'm not complaining. But there's so much more to Elliot than covers. The guy should teach a masterclass on the craft of songwriting. Lesson one could be titled, Hold Up a Mirror, because each and every song he's written and recorded shows the imperfections, defects, yes, but also the smiles and sincere eyes of a life anchored in music. In this conversation, which is part one of a two-part series for the podcast, we cover a wide range of topics, including the impact of Elliot's religious upbringing on his music, the challenges and rewards of Elliot's career, the surprising benefits of that live streaming during the pandemic, and reflections on his artistic journey. The episode concludes with an acoustic version of What I've Done With My Life, the last track on his latest album, released this year, called Talking to Myself. In all those live streams through the years, it likely felt like Elliot was talking and singing to himself. But thank goodness for all of us who have ears to listen, because his words aren't cheap. They are authentically layered on top of intricate guitar chords and picking. Sure, he can do a cover. And sure, he can make a Prince song his own. But Elliot's magic is in the mirror he holds up through his songs, and we are lucky enough to peek over his shoulder and get a listen. Elliot Bronson, Let's dive in. Elliot, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me, Jason.
So you've got a lot going on in 2024 so far. I guess my first question is, what's been more exciting for you? Releasing the new album or swimming with manatees?
That's a pretty good question. I'm going to go with the record just because I think I may swim with the manatees again one day, but I'm never going to make this record again.
Oh, that's a good answer. All right. That's good. The manatees thing, how did that come up?
Well, my girlfriend, she's had this sort of lifelong obsession with manatees. Like when she was in high school or something. Yeah. Or no, like elementary.
Yeah.
She just kind of like took to them or kind of started writing all her papers about them. And so as long as we've been together, she's been like the last 4 years, she's been like, you know, we got to take a trip to swim with the manatees. And I thought, well, you know, if I don't do that, you know, what kind of boyfriend am I?
That's true. That's a good move. Good move.
So we did it. It was really wild.
Yeah.
Recommended.
All right. Well, good. Well, I saw that on your, you know, on social media and sure. I was like, that looks pretty fun. So,
yeah. Yeah.
But you've got a lot going on. I'm going to talk about the album quite a bit and some of the songs and whatnot, but, just a few other things before that. I'm just, you know, again, curious about, right?
Yeah.
So
like a goldfish.
Like, yeah, exactly. Curious goldfish. What's funny about researching for this and preparing for this, and I tried to watch a few older interviews. You look great today, by the way.
Oh, thanks. How bad did I look back then?
Well, better than, there's one and it looked like you were in New York City or something, and you didn't even look like you. But anyway, that's besides the point.
This interview's over.
No, you look great. I've watching some interviews, and what's interesting is the whole Pentecostal
sure.
background. Mm-hmm. Because I grew up in the Midwest, in Missouri, and the headquarters for the Assemblies of God Church are in Springfield, Missouri.
Okay.
I attended an Assemblies of God Church growing up.
Oh, did you?
So when you said that, and the fact that, like, I think it was your grandparents?
Yes.
Your granddad, and then your dad a little bit, right?
Yeah, a little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
Informally. But.
Yeah. No, so it's just really interesting because I can see where some of the musical inspiration came from, because of all the Christian denominations that I've attended, that one's like very musical.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
There was music every Sunday, and, you know, not just sort of like that stiff,
right.
Like singing hymns, which can be beautiful, but, you know, the guitars, tambourines, pianos.
The whole thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember growing up watching, this is kind of embarrassing, but it is what it is. I don't have any regrets, but, you know, my parents would watch like Jimmy Swaggart.
Right. Right. Yeah, mine too.
Yeah. And he could play the piano. And like you said, it was this whole thing. And it was actually really, really good
yeah.
in a lot of ways from a musical yeah. standpoint. But I just was just curious, like, how much of an imprint did that make on you outside of music?
Well, I think it made a big imprint. It's always hard to tell, you know, because you'd only know your life. But obviously the music was a big thing. And church was like, I went to the church, the physical church that my dad grew up in, inside of, lived in. So when I say we grew up in the church, they really grew
yeah,
up
exactly.
in the church. And it was almost across the street, around the corner from the house where my mom grew up in. And they met through that church community. And so the community was such a big part of everyone's life. And it was Baltimore City, but it was more like a small town, this little neighborhood called Brooklyn, oddly.
Oh, wow.
And so my childhood was in that neighborhood, in that house, and in that church around the corner. And so, yeah, I think it had a deep influence, you know, musically. I mean, in good ways and bad ways,
right.
theologically.
Right.
But I think it kept me interested in the big questions, I think. I think it primed me for that anyway. I don't know.
What memories do you have that are positive from that?
From that experience? Yeah. Well, I mean, the music, of course, was constant. My mom always reminds me, although my memory on this is pretty, you know, hazy, that the first time I sang in public was in front of the church singing a song called I Am a Promise, I Am a Possibility.
I am a promise. I am a possibility.
That's the one, yeah.
That's the one, right?
That's the one. So I got my first taste of performance there, too. So, Yeah, that's one memory, but there were so many like that, you know.
Yeah, well, that's good. You know, I haven't listened to your songs 10 times over with all the albums that you've done.
Right.
Faith, the idea of faith and the topic of faith doesn't really, it's there, but it's really, it's more subtle, right?
Yeah.
Is that intentional? Is that just...
I suppose so. I mean, my spirituality is pretty personal, and it certainly informs how I look at the world and how I move through the world. But I'm not interested in preaching anything to anyone at all.
Right.
I've got more questions than answers. That makes sense. And also, you know, I think the best songs are songs that open you up and connect us to each other. And when you get a political song or a religious, overtly religious song, anything that divides the room, it's doing the opposite of what I'm trying to do anyway.
Which is bring people together and have people actually like pay attention.
Right.
Right.
Yeah. Right. I mean, it's, well, to be honest, a lot of it's from me. I mean, I'm writing songs to heal myself and make myself feel better, but I have discovered that if you do that with sincerity and honesty and you work at it, then you tell your story in such a way that you tell other people's stories too. It's for others, but I won't pretend that it isn't selfish as well, but I think it's a type of selfishness that's a healthy type of selfishness, if that makes sense.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's good. Yeah, I think in your most recent album, you found a way to incorporate Philistine. I'm like, that must have been from Sunday school way back when, or vacation Bible school or something.
I do this thing that I probably picked up from Dylan, which is, you know, that's a song. That's in my song, Are You Still Mean? And if you look at a lot of those songs, like, I don't know, like Tangled Up in Blue or something like that, every time he gets to the line right before Tangled Up in Blue, you know, I bent down to tie the laces of my shoes, Tangled Up in Blue, you know? And so each time it's like the punch is a setup.
It's a setup.
And he's not the only writer who did that, and he didn't invent it, but it's a type of songwriting, and I enjoy doing that myself. So if you listen to that song, you'll notice that I set up Are You Still Mean a myriad of ways. And maybe I just ran out of rhymes and I needed something interesting.
Philistine's a good play, though. Like, it's
well, it made sense. Impressive. It made sense for the song too, and the character I'm describing in the song. I mean, but I wasn't necessarily going for a biblical reference, although it works on that level maybe too.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. All right.
But I also like, you know, I just think one of the things that's very interesting in songwriting is, one of the things that's important in songwriting is holding the listener's attention. And one of the interesting ways of doing that is to play with people's expectations by giving them a rhyme that they haven't heard.
Hmm.
And this is craft and technical, you know how, but if you look again at someone like Dylan or any of the great writers, you know, they're not going to give you a rhyme every line that you can expect, you know? So when you know a rhyme is coming, your ear gets primed for it. And then when something comes that rhymes, but it isn't anything on your, you know, map, that's satisfying in a way to the listener.
And to you, probably.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, if it isn't satisfying to me, then it's not going to be satisfying to the listener. That's a bar, right?
Yeah.
If I don't like it.
Right.
I mean, there are those rare cases where I write something and I'm like, I don't know if it's good. And then other people convince me that it is. But, you know, at some point I had to like what I was making. Otherwise, I wouldn't have finished it.
Right. So I saw you this last weekend perform. And what I loved a lot of it. All of it. I'll just say that. Not...
I already threatened to leave once.
Let me just preface that. No.
Yeah, thanks.
You did something that I wish more people would do, which is before the song, you actually are like, in so many words, you're like, hey guys, I'm about to do a song. Pay attention to this one line because I'm really proud of it.
Yeah.
And it's not about like a pride thing, but it's like I could tell that you take pride in that craft. And you're, it's almost like it's, whether it's clever or whether it's has a special meaning, you kind of call it out. And I love that. I wish more people did that.
Thanks. It's one of the arrows in my quiver or bag of tricks that I have as a performer, which I think, you know, is connected to being a writer, but it's not the same skill. You know, you could be a great writer and not a great performer. You could be a great performer and not write at all. You know, these are different things. But I've been doing this long enough to realize that, you know, especially when I'm playing solo, I'm just one guy with a guitar and I'm asking you to give me your full attention for an hour and a half, and we can't even, you know, give our attention for 5 minutes, and let, you know, with the way, you know, our phones are, you know, the way that we're so, you know, distractible.
Sure.
And so I'm always trying to find ways to either tell a funny story or tell a joke or maybe lift up the curtain, or maybe it's just go ahead and point out the lyric in such a way that when you get to that lyric, you know, you get a little tickle, or you light up and you laugh and you start to appreciate the song a little more. And I think it's just one of the many ways I'm trying to keep people tuned in. I want my show to be as good as anything else you could have done for that hour and a half.
Right. So you mentioned earlier you have more questions than answers. I think the context of that was like the faith, faith topic. But like, what at this point in your career, what are you most curious about?
Wow. I mean, that's a big question. It could be answered in any number of ways, right? Well, I mean, I'm fascinated by, I don't know if curiosity is the right word, but it might be. I'm fascinated by art in general and songs in particular. I mean, I've been at it for a long time, but I'm endlessly curious about what makes music work. You know, why is it that I can string a sentence together and sing it with pitch, which is just a frequency. You know, it's just an oscillation of sound in the air. It's invisible. It's not anything. I mean, it's not, and yet I can do it. And if I do it well, you might cry or you might laugh or you might want to dance. And, I'll never quite understand why that is. I don't know that I want to understand why that is, because it's such a beautiful thing. And there's no end to it. Like, you know, you can write a song that you're absolutely in love with, but there's an infinite supply of creativity in the universe, so you can continue to mine it and change. And I love, I also love the process of growing as an artist and changing as an artist and deepening as an artist.
Mm-hmm.
And it teaches me about who I am. My songs teach me, you know, I get to see myself through my own songs that come back to me. It's a way of getting outside of yourself. It's a way of, like, I think I might've said it at the show, but it's a way of telling myself something if it's interesting enough or more beautiful enough that I may actually pay attention to it. Because, you know, we all have things we know we should do or advice that we have for ourselves. We all have our own wisdom, but how often do we listen to ourselves? But if you put it into something like a song or a painting or a poem or, hell, a good dinner,
right.
You know, you make something out of it, then you get to really appreciate it and see it, and then it changes you.
Yeah.
And hopefully maybe change other people too.
No, that's beautiful. I do have a question. So when you said like the pitch, when you were talking about the pitch and it's unlimited, you're a great picker of the guitar.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's really something.
Thanks.
I don't play an instrument, but I've always wondered, is there an unlimited supply of picking options in around notes and melodies, or really is it limited and it's just how you turn the phrase or how you use it? Does that make sense?
Yeah, I mean, there are a limited number of notes.
Yeah.
In the scale, you know, the diatonic scale or the chromatic scale, sorry. But you can use them in an infinite, because it's not just the order of the notes, right? It's the chords that go behind them, which is the harmony. And then there's the rhythm, you know? So I don't think we're ever going to run out of ways to order sound, you know, and to reorder sound. It's an infinite well. And then you add words to it, right? If you want to. And then you add words to that. So no, I mean, creativity is just, it's so vast.
Yeah.
No, and it's wild. It's actually wild when you listen to like something like country music or folk music, how most of it is only three or four chords.
Exactly. Yeah.
We don't lose interest.
No, I know.
You know, I mean.
It's like songs sound the same, but they're different, you know?
Sure. And you know, you can write a song that is reminiscent of other songs, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
People do it all the time. And people steal songs, even. I mean, you know, even the greats. Like, I've already mentioned Dylan, but Dylan stole tons. But it doesn't take away from the art, because he made something out of other things that's new. There's something novel about it.
Yeah.
It's not simply stealing.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
But there are sometimes people do just steal.
Well, that was the whole Ed Sheeran thing, right?
Oh, I can't.
You know, with the lawsuit.
They threw that out.
Yeah, they threw that out.
But
his point was like, listen, there's these.
That wasn't even close.
These chord arrangements
right.
Can all sound the same, but it's all new art.
But sometimes it does happen. Like, I think it was Sam Smith, wasn't it? Who wrote this song that was that Petty was reminiscent of, like, I don't know, Won't Back Down. I can't remember now, but that he did get compensated.
Oh, wow.
Although I think I remember from Tom Petty, he said at the time, like, this happens all the time. Yeah. Usually it doesn't get out of the studio, but occasionally it does. And the song's still out. I mean, I think now Petty just has like writing partial writing credit. So.
Well, good.
So yeah, I mean,
yeah,
I don't even worry about it.
So you talked about the unlimited creativity when you released Empty Spaces. You talked about that song and sort of the essence of that is simplicity. You know, when you release that, I think because it was just, I think you said it was like just a couple lines on a chorus, basically.
Yeah.
And on your new album. The song that I have on repeat is, I think it's the first one, Wait For Me.
Yeah.
Here's what I love about it.
Yeah.
So when I listen to it the first time, it sounds very complicated. It sounds like there's a lot of things going on, the instrumentation, the lyrics, the whole thing. But when I printed out the lyrics, there's not a lot going on. But that's what makes it beautiful. And I sort of looked at my phone when it was playing. You basically say, you know, when I fall behind, when I'm gone a long time, wait for me. Those three words, it takes you 50 seconds to get to that. Right?
Does it?
Yeah, it takes you 50 seconds.
That's it. To get to the end of that.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think that the song has a particularly long intro, so I don't want folks to think that my music is just like a bunch of meandering until we get to the words.
No, but what my point on that is that your picking and the instrumentation, it fills the spaces.
Right. Also, I hold those notes out.
You hold the notes
when
out.
I hold fall, I don't know if that's one full or two full measures. I can't think of it off the top of my head. But yeah, that is a stretched out lyric.
But the lyrics are so simple.
Oh, yeah. They're
incredibly simple.
Straightforward.
You've turned it into like a completely beautiful thing.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
But yeah, that, I just noticed that, right? And then, you know, when I lose my nerve, when I've lost the words, wait for me.
Yeah.
Not a lot there, but right. So much there.
Right. Well, I'll just mention Petty. I'll just use that as an example. Won't back down, won't back down. Stand me up at the gates of hell and I won't back down. Stand my ground, won't be turned around.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, and I'll keep this world from turning me around, won't back down. I mean, it's not, there are many types of good songs, you know, and sometimes, you know, it's Bohemian Rhapsody, you know, and it's lots of words and they're all over the place. And sometimes it's just something like, Let It Be, right? When I find myself in times of trouble, Mother Mary comes to me speaking words of wisdom, let it be.
Yeah.
Let it be, let it be, let it be, let it be. Speaking words of wisdom, let it be. Right. So sometimes it's not about being complicated or being tricky or being clever. There are songs that are great that actually do that really, really well. And I think there are just many types of good songs. And sometimes when the sentiment is something as simple as Wait For Me, you know, or Empty Spaces.
Right.
Where it's just, I'm just trying to go straight to the heart with this one, you know. And sometimes the vulnerability of simplicity, like not hiding behind clever, can add power to a song.
Mm.
Because you really feel like, you know, if your partner, your wife or husband or whoever comes to you and says something as simple as, you know, hey, when I'm not great, would you wait for me? Like that would be more powerful than if they had like a big flowery song and dance, you know, and they didn't get to that heart. So sometimes I'm just going straight at the heart. Sometimes I'm going for a little of the mind, but you know, just depends on the song.
Well, on the flip side, simplicity works both ways, right? You can have something like Wait For Me. You can also have Are You Still Mean?
Right.
Right.
Yeah. That one's got a little more clever in it than Wait For Me does. But the structure of it's pretty simple.
Yeah. Is it fair that Empty Spaces you wrote at a time of like heartbreak?
Oh, yeah.
Complete heartbreak, right?
Totally.
Right.
Yes.
So if that's the case, and that was from a 10-year engagement?
Yeah. Well, 10-year relationship.
10-year relationship? Yeah.
Okay. We weren't engaged the whole time.
Yeah. Yeah. But 10-year relationship that you were engaged.
Yeah. Yeah. Essentially. You know, a marriage of sorts.
Right. Yeah. It's like a divorce, right?
Yeah. I mean, other than the law.
Right.
It was, you know, we lived together. We were together for a long time. We were engaged. So,
yeah.
So, yeah. So that record was me working that out.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
What is this record then? Because there's still elements of that, right?
Well, I mean, it's my life. So, I mean, I'm not one of these people who generally writes fictional songs, or what's a better way to put it, like writing from the perspective of a character. You know, I have done it. It's fun sometimes, but I just find that for my therapy, I need to work through my junk, and that seems to be the best material that I come up with. So, I mean, some of it's a continuing story of healing that doesn't happen overnight. This record came out of, really out of the whole pandemic period, because like a lot of artists, I had to cancel tours and had to stay at home and started live streaming. And that really changed the whole thing for me. I never would have believed that like broadcasting on Facebook would do anything interesting at all. But, you know, not only did I find a community and sort of almost like create a community, I mean, or the community created itself around me, you know, these folks who would tune in every single week because I did a live stream on Wednesday night, March 18th, 2020, and then I repeated that for 165 weeks, and I didn't miss a week. So it went on. Even when I started touring again, I was reluctant to give it up, so I packed all my live stream gear in the car, and I just didn't take any stage gigs on Wednesdays because I made sure I kept it going. And the folks who would tune in, they started to know each other, and they're from all different parts of the country. They would check in on each other's families, and you know, and it became something bigger than me, which was really fascinating and gratifying, and it helped me grow as an artist and as a person because it made me less selfish about it. You know, I was realizing that I was the hub of something that was kind of special to this group of people, and so. So that changed me a lot. And then what also changed me was I was gigging every week in my living room or in my friend's living room for a while, actually, the way it went down. But I was gigging every week, and I quickly figured out that it would probably, people would maybe lose interest if I just kept playing my favorite songs that I wrote every week. So I started mixing in covers, but I would theme it. So I'd be like, here's my favorite songs from the 70s, or here's my favorite Bob Dylan songs, or here's Jackson Brown, or here's Lucinda Williams. And so, you know, I've been playing guitar and singing and performing for forever, and I've always been mostly interested in writing.
Right.
But I went to school for, right. You know, for 3 years. I got a little mini degree in covering my favorite writers, and then even writers I didn't even think I would cover, like Prince, you know, who thought I could turn Prince songs into Elliott songs. And so at the end of that period, I had written a lot of songs. I'd played a lot solo, and I thought, I want to create that feeling of sitting in the living room, just me, intimately performing my songs. And so the initial idea was a totally solo record, just me and a guitar. And I got in there, and I was like, well, we could add a little. So we got some pedal steel, we got some upright bass, and a few other instruments. But I intentionally kept it sparse, and I kept it simple. And so musically, that is where the record came from. And then personally, I think I was also working out not only the last of what was left over from Empty Spaces, but a lot of just themes of isolation and loneliness and solitude, reflection, all the things that I think that, the at least for me, that the whole pandemic period sort of spurred on.
Yeah. Is the talking to myself, is that basically born out of the fact that you're performing in front of a screen?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't literally that, but I realized that it felt like that. I mean, after the song was written, I realized that sometimes when I'm doing these live streams, it did feel very much like I was playing to myself. I had to remind myself that these people, these little, you know, symbols on the screen floating up in front of me are represent humans who are watching me because it's very different. There's an energy exchange with people when you're in the room with them. I believe that you're not only listening to me and seeing me, but there's physical energy being, you know, passed back and forth. And I'm not a real woo-woo kind of person, or maybe I am, depends who you ask. On the spectrum of woo-woo, I'm somewhere in the middle. But I can feel it. I can feel it as a listener. I can feel it as a performer. And when you take that away, it does feel very isolating. So yeah, there was this element of aloneness, of isolation, of talking to myself that became the theme for the record. And I didn't write the song to be the theme of the record, but when I went to title the album, I didn't want to name it after one of the songs because I did that in the last one, and I don't know. I thought, let's just come up with something cool and weird, but had this title, Talking to Myself, Staring Me in the Face, that had everything to do with everything I just told you and everything I was excited about this record, all the reasons I was excited about this record. So I just, sometimes you just go with what the universe is trying to hand you and you don't fight it. So that it was the obvious title.
No, it works. Yeah, it totally works. So you mentioned the Prince stuff. How did When Doves Cry, how did that become a thing for you?
Well, it became, it was literally born out of doing these themed Wednesday nights. I had covered like all of my favorites, you know. I had done the Beatles and Petty and Jackson Browne and Paul Simon and anyone you can think of. I basically did, and I was even anyone who was remotely folky, you know, or Americana or country that I loved, I did all my heroes. And then I was like, well, I should probably try some things that are a little harder for me. Like maybe I'll do David Bowie and maybe I'll do Prince. So I actually did a whole Prince night and I covered a ton of Prince songs. And for whatever reason, the version I kind of cooked up for myself for When Doves Cry, I just love singing it. I love playing it. It doesn't resemble the original in a whole lot of ways.
Yeah.
Lyrically it does, and obviously some of the melody it does, but I feel like it just made it work for me. And I really love watching people in the room as they slowly, it dawns on them I'm singing a Prince song.
Yeah. Anyway. No, it's cool, because I think if you go to on YouTube and type in Elliot Bronson,
yeah,
it's like Elliot Bronson, and then in the suggested search, it's When Doves Cry.
Oh, is it up there?
Yeah, yeah.
Is there a version of me on YouTube?
I don't know. Like, I wasn't interested in it from the standpoint of like, yeah, I wanted to learn more about your music. But yeah. But then when you played it the other night, I'm like, okay, this must be a
thing. I guess people are searching for it. I've been doing it, I don't know, not every show, but for the last year or so, I've been throwing it into my sets. It's funny that it's been searched for enough. I can't even search for myself. I can't even stand watching. You know, it's too much. It's a fun moment. And I'm trying to put a show together that is entertaining and, you know, hopefully moving.
Yeah.
Make you cry, make you laugh, all the things. And that's just, you know, it's one moment in the show. I got some goofy songs. I got some real tearjerkers. And then I got this, like, Prince moment.
Oh, it works, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, it's good. Is the live stream community that you mentioned, is that the I Love Your Gutslandia?
Yes.
Is that?
Yeah.
So where did the I Love Your Guts come from? Because that's kind of your tagline, right?
I know. It's so ridiculous. If I had, like a lot of things that I do, it was spontaneous. And if I could rename it, I would. I can't rename the group. And also people have just gotten attached to it, I guess. But I think it was something I would say, maybe even with my old band, I would, you know, we just goofing around because people say, I hate your guts, you know? So it was like, I love your guts. And then, I don't know, it just stuck. So now we're thinking of Portlandia. So I love your gutslandia. It's ridiculous.
That's great.
It's totally ridiculous.
When the Brilliant Inventions kind of split up, at the time you said, you know, when something ends, there's opportunity. Hmm. When that happened, did you anticipate at all where you are today? Like, you know, doing what you're doing, very successful. A lot of listeners on Spotify, the Yellowstone placement, the touring, all that. I mean, was that a moment? Because you've had to pick up the pieces,
right?
A few different times in your career, right?
Right.
Did you anticipate that this would be where you would be?
It's a good question. I don't think that we in this interview so far had addressed the Brilliant Inventions, but I should say that was my previous duo band that I was in my early mid 20s. We played together for about 5-6 years, so it was a big chunk of my musical life, and we had this trajectory where we were, a lot of cool things came together for us quickly, and we kind of thought we were, you know, rock stars in the making or something like that. So when we broke up, it was pretty tough because I didn't know what I was going to do at that point. And I was, you know, 30-ish, early 30s.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, well, I haven't really developed any other marketable skills. So this is it, you know. And I made a record on Shoestring with my buddy Will Robertson. And I remember feeling, because it's been a while now, and I remember feeling like, I just don't know. Like, is anybody going to like this? It's very different than what I did with Josh. We were quirky and upbeat and fun, and I was doing a lot more serious stuff, and I don't know, maybe not serious, but poetic. And luckily, there was a few good reviews right out of the gate. People started coming to shows, and it wasn't overnight at all. But so your question, like, did I anticipate being here? No, I had no idea.
Yeah.
I thought this could be the beginning or the end just as easily. I have no idea which one it's going to be. But, you know, I have learned something, and I've learned a few things. One of the things I've learned about myself is, like, this art thing, this music thing, this songwriting thing is I don't necessarily believe in like a destiny or a purpose, but it's my calling. It's like what I have to do. I mean, for whatever reason, I just have to do it. There's not a choice in it. And so whether it works or it doesn't work, I'll be over here putting together songs and singing them and selling them to whoever is interested.
So that reminds me of the last track, which is called What I've Done With My Life.
Right.
Is that a song of pride? Is it a song of regret? Is it a song of reflection? Like, what? Where's that come from?
It's a song of reflection for sure. It is a conversation that I think I had with myself in writing it, where you take stock of your life and the choices you made. And I'm really proud of that one. That's one of my favorite songs I've written because it's not black and white, because the song does take, it has the self-doubt in it. It has the tinges of regret, but ultimately I believe there's redemption in it as well. So yeah, when I said it was a calling, that is certainly reflected in the lyrics of that song. And if you listen to it, each verse goes a little deeper into like peeling layers off the onion, you know, about why, you know. So it starts off very simply and kind of comically. What I've done with my life is to make up silly rhymes and climb up on the stage and talk about my crimes. Yeah. I've squandered my blessings, got no children and no wife, just years of confessing what I've done with my life. So it does start off like maybe negative, you know, but then as it goes on, you realize that, or I realize maybe, that I've been working at something that was important, at least to me and maybe to other people as well. So then it gets to later on, it gets to what I've done with my life is to swim against the stream, to stare in the face of sorrow and try to find meaning. I've sharpened my language. It can cut just like a knife. And every single song I've sang is what I've done with my life. And that could be the ending. That could be that'd be just a fine ending. But then, and I did skip the second verse, but then it goes another layer even deeper than that, where I say what I've done with my life is to try and pierce the veil, to see through the illusion and to know what's really real. I ain't asking for forgiveness. I ain't offering advice. I just sing so I can live with what I've done with my life. So in the end, it's sort of like this honest appraisal, you know? I know I'm doing this to heal myself. I get it. But I'm also looking for something deeper and transcendent even in this process. And yeah, you know, I have the self-doubts, and sometimes I think it was crazy to get on this path. All of it. It's all in there. That's why I love it.
One time after a show, someone came up to me and they said, I like that song you played called What Have I Done With My Life? <That's right>. The song is called What I've Done With My Life. Got no children and no wife, just years of confessing what I've done with my life. What I've done with my life is to drive from town to town, tell my tales to strangers, share a couple rounds. I have had my fun, oh, but I've paid the price for the race I have run and what I've done with my life. What I've done with my life is to swim against the stream, to stare in the face of sorrow and try to find meaning. I've sharpened by language. It can cut just like a knife. And every single song I sing is what I've done with my life.
Thanks so much for joining us for another episode of Curious Goldfish. Please follow and subscribe to the podcast and on social media. Also, tell your music-loving friends about us too. Until next time, stay curious.